So let's continue after lunch here. I hope you had enough. You didn't get enough to eat, and that's entirely your fault. Okay. So anyway, I hope this helps us understand about the two witnesses some more. Now, I talk about them in writing the book, appointed times. So let's go ahead and talk a little bit about the calendar. Where is the, here are some three questions related to the calendar postponements. Okay. When were the calendar postponements put in place? We don't know exactly. So let's start this way. Number one, do you believe that the priest, descendants of the priest and the Levites within the Jewish community, see, not the Jews, but the Aaronic priesthood descendants and the Levitical descendants within the Jewish community, do you believe that they preserved the Old Testament? Do you? Yes, indeed. All right. A lot of people don't believe in the calculated Hebrew calendar because it's not in the Bible. It's not in the Bible because God gave it to the priesthood. Is God capable of making even someone who you would consider unreliable? Could he make them do what he wants them to do? Answer, yes. Look at Balaam. Hey, I'm coming down to curse. Give me the money. Seven times he blessed. Okay? Do you suppose that any of those descendants of the priesthood, and of course they understand that they're descendants of the priesthood, because their names are generally Cohen, Khan, Kun, etc., okay? They know they're descendants of the Levites because they're Levi. Okay? Even when they were scattered, God preserved the knowledge of the scriptures and the calculated Hebrew calendar. Nowhere in the Bible did he ever give any man the authority to determine the calendar, whether by observation or whether by calculation that was separate from the Aaronic priesthood and the calendar court, period. Now, a lot of people say, end of story. But you know, a lot of people don't like to be told that. Yet they still believe that God preserved the Old Testament through them. Why then could he not preserve the calculated Hebrew calendar? Who set the appointed times? God did. Genesis 1:14. It involves the heavens, the stars, the sun, the earth, and the moon. That's why on the cover of the book, The Appointed Times of the Messiah, we have all four of those. And it was done on the fourth day. And in my recent letter, I also pointed out the number 4 and 5 relation to the Passover, and also in relation to Pentecost. Okay? All of those are appointed times. Did any man set it? No. We read there, we're right here in Revelation, so just turn the page. Revelation 13 and verse 8. It says, the last sentence there, the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world. All right. No man was around at that time, correct? Weren't even created yet, right? Okay. Now let's see something else concerning appointed times. Let's come to Romans, the 5th chapter. Because the crucifixion of Jesus Christ had to happen on that particular day. And it had to be where there was the Passover on the 4th day or the middle of the week. See, because you have 7, and if you have 4, that means you have 1, 2, 3 in front of it, and 5, 6, 7 after it. So that's the middle, that's the fulcrum. Okay? Now, this pattern of 7 also comes in with the Bible. That's why we have the Holy Bible in its original order. There are 7 divisions of the Bible. The law, the prophets, and the writings or Psalms. What's the 4th division? Gospels and Acts. What does that contain? How do they end with the crucifixion of Christ, correct? So it's the 4th division, talking about the sacrifice of God through Jesus Christ on the 4th day of the week in 30 AD. And now we have so many true historical dates which to verify and cross-verify, there can be absolutely no doubt. Okay? Now, come here to Romans 5 and let's see that God appointed the time. The specific day. What did Jesus say in his prayer? What did we read? Father, if it is your will to let this cup pass from me, nevertheless, not my will but your will. He knew. Now notice verse 6. For even when we were without strength at the appointed time, by whom? God the Father. No man. Is God perfect? Yes. Is his law perfect? Yes. Is his word perfect? Yes. Now, God allows some men to make a few mistakes in there so that they will realize that they are fallible. But as far as the knowledge of salvation, every single Bible has the basic knowledge of salvation. Now, they may not all be good for doctrine. They may not be completely faithful to the original Hebrew or the Greek, but God made sure that it would never be so perverted that it didn't contain the basic message, and God preserved the Hebrew and God preserved the Greek. And there, God always has those who are faithful who will translate them, preach them, even if it gets down like Abraham to one man. See, God is in charge. At the appointed time, Christ died for the ungodly. That was the Passover day. Why then do we have the calendar with postponements? All right. Let's answer the question this way with this first question. Was there a time when the calendar was in perfect synchronization? Yes. We can deduce, because there's no calendar in the Bible. There is no calendar in the Bible. Once again, there is no calendar in the Bible, only reference to the calendar. And he gave it to the priest and the Levites to preserve. Okay? When you read in the book of Genesis, you find the months are 30 days long. There are 12 months in the year, which means there were 360 days. And that's the solar equivalent of the earth going around the sun. All right, think about this for a minute. When you do mathematics or you do trigonometry or you do surveying, wherever you use a circle, how many degrees are in a circle? 360. That goes right back to the original year. Okay? Now, because of the sins of men, and if you read the book Worlds in Collision by Velikovsky, who was a Russian Jew, they know that Mars came close to the Earth. And there was even some rocks from Mars that came onto the Earth. And they were able to verify it when they sent those two rovers up to Mars. You know, they polluted Mars, don't you? They let off so many toxins up there that the temperature went up on Mars by the same percentage it went up on Earth. Because of all the exhaust coming out of those electrical... See? They ran on solar powers. I'm being cynical because man has a very little to do with global warming. It is the sun controlled by God, and it is the solar flares that make it warmer. And if you watch History Channel long enough, they will have a special on the mini ice age. Anyway, that ice age lasted, mini ice age, for 500 years, from 1300, middle 1300, to the middle 1800s. And that's when Greenland was no longer green. So that's, they know, when there were the fewest solar flares during that 500 years. So it got cooler. Now with what's going on now, we don't know exactly what's taking place, but these huge solar flares that we're having right now could very well have something to do with the creeping of the magnetic north and south. Have you read about that? There's evidence that the magnetic shift completely north and south like that a couple of times because of the way that the rocks have been preserved, the alignment of the molecules in the rocks. Okay. No, I don't think the Earth flipped. The magnetics changed. Positive to negative and negative to positive. Okay. So the solar flares that we are having now, are they helping to stabilize with additional magnetic power from the sun to stabilize the drifting of the poles? They're not ready to switch, they're just moving. They've moved many times in the past, see? Okay. Because something happened to the Earth in relationship to the sun. Now, in the Bible, the last recorded astronomical event that we know of is moving the sundial back by 10 degrees. Now, how did God do that? We know by the laws that God has given, if he stopped the earth, everything would be destroyed. So he didn't stop the spinning of it. He didn't make the earth reverse. So we put this to a mathematician with this question. If the Earth had an orbit of 360 days, what would have to happen without stopping the Earth from spinning to have that elongated to 365 and a quarter days? So they figured it out, and the sun or the Earth would have to move obliquely. Instead of continuing the orbit this way, it would move a little obliquely this way, and that would give the appearance of the sundial going backwards, and the whole Earth had to move in relationship to the sun 1.4 degrees. Okay? Somehow, our year now is 365 and a quarter days. And so you do this to everyone who says, well, I don't believe in postponements. Or I believe that Hillel in 350s AD invented the postponements. He did not. we'll get to him a little later. Ask him this. What about today's calendar? Since you don't believe in postponements, what do you do when 29th of February is required every 4 years? Do you accept that day? You got him. It's the same thing. It's a postponement. Because here's what you have to do astronomically. Any leftover or remainder amounts that are not whole numbers, you hold those and accumulate them until you get a whole number. So if it's a quarter of a day, then the next year it's a half a day. The next year it's three quarters of a day. And when it comes to three quarters of a day, you will notice that the calendar says spring begins on March 20th. Then the fourth year, they add the 29th day, and then the calendar reads spring begins the 21st of March because you added the day necessary to balance out the equation. See? That's a postponement. Some people, having absolutely no knowledge, being totally oblivious to any knowledge of the heavens and the earth, say, well, it's just like watching the sundown. Anybody can look out there and watch the sundown. That's true. But that's for the days. Well, we watch for the new moon. Or we go by the dark side of the moon. See, if you watch for the new moon in this hemisphere, you're always going to be a day late. Always. And what most people think is the new moon when they see it is not the new moon. Now, God has something very important that he has with the calendar for the first month and the seventh month. Let's go back to Psalm 81. Psalm 81. And you can prove this. This coming night to be much observed, I hope it's not cloudy, you go outside and you look up in the sky and you will see a full moon marking the 15th day of the first month. Now, what you will also see if you're out traveling and you keep the Passover, as you're driving home, say you get home about 11 o'clock or so, you will see the moon is almost full because it's going toward Australia. And when it gets down there, in a few hours after you see it here, that is the 15th down there. See? Okay. Now let's understand something else. As you view the earth from heaven, every complete day, everywhere on the earth, requires 48 hours. Because you start, let's start with the, and also the international dateline. In the calculated Hebrew calendar, they said that from Jerusalem you must go 90 degrees east. Guess where the international dateline is? See? Okay. Now, you start with the international dateline and say it's sundown in New Zealand. It takes 24 hours for the sun to go down all around the earth to come to the next sundown, doesn't it? Okay? And it takes 24 hours for the sun to go around the earth for the daytime. So that takes 48 hours as you look down from heaven. See, when you get off the earth, things change. If you want to go to the moon, you must go in a circle to get there. You can't go in a straight line. If you try and go in a straight line, you're going to miss it because the moon is moving, the earth is moving, there are forces out there in space, all working toward it. Okay. Psalm 81. Psalm 81, verse 3. If I said 83, I beg your pardon. Okay. Psalm 81, verse 3. Blow the trumpet at the new moon. And we'll see why it, I'll tell you why it has to be calculated here in just a bit. And also at the full moon, on our solemn feast day. Now, let me tell you about the new moon in relationship to the full moon. Well, first of all, let me tell you about the setting of the moon before it becomes new. The setting of the moon is when the moon goes to its dark phase. Once, and that's when you get up real early in the morning and you see the little sliver of the moon on the horizon very early in the morning. That is the last day of the visible moon. The next night, you get up the next morning, you won't see anything. All right. Once the moon sets, it can take as short as 16 plus hours before the new moon is visible. Or it can take up to 42 hours. A whole day's difference. Because the moon is not traveling at the same speed all the time. It goes fast, it goes slow. Same way with the Earth. The orbit of the Earth is not a perfect circle. It's an elliptical thing. And the moon has 5,000 preambulations or different movements that the ancients knew of. You know, we think, oh, we're smart and they're stupid. It's the other way around. They're smart and we're stupid. Okay? So, because you need to have the full moon on the feast, not only do you have to reckon the time that it's in the dark, you also have to reckon the time to when the moon will be full. That can vary from 13 and a half days to 16 days. Now, how are you going to compensate for that? Because God requires it here, you see. See what else he said here, okay? Verse 4, this was a statute for Israel, a law of the God of Jacob. This he ordained in Joseph for a testimony when he went forth against the land of Egypt. So it's a law of God. Okay. Are the descendants of Aaron and Levi, are they preservers of the law of God, the Old Testament? Yes. God gave them the calculations for the Bible or the calendar as well. Okay. Now, why are postponements necessary? Postponements are necessary to keep everything synchronized. Now, just imagine this. You have three racetracks side by side. You have this short racetrack over here that's for the small cars. You have the middle racetrack, which is for the medium-sized cars. You have the big racetrack, which is for the big ones. Okay? Now, when you have an automobile race and they tell you how fast that the driver drove, what is the speed they are giving you? The fastest or the slowest? Because they don't go around the circle or the track at the same speed. They go down the back stretch and the front stretch, and they go a whole lot faster, so when they get to the turn, they've got to slow down. And if they don't slow down, sayonara. All right? So you've got this group over here going an average of 200 miles an hour. You have the middle group going an average of 120 miles an hour. You have the small group going an average at 85 miles an hour. All right? You line them all up. As you look down on the three of them, the starting line is the same. The gun to set, have them start is fired at the same instance for all three. When Will they come back to the same position that they were in the starting position? Because this one is going 200 miles an hour, this one's going 125 miles an hour, and this one's going 75 miles an hour. And that's an average. The truth is, you can get a close approximation within maybe minutes or seconds. This one is going to have to go around many, many, many times to match the fewer times with the middle one, to match the fewer times with the big one, to get them back together, see. So this is what happens with the 19-year time cycle. Have you heard of that? Okay. What is a 19-year time cycle? There are two of them. 19-year time cycle for the moon, 19-year time cycle for the sun. Because the length of a month with the moon is no longer 30 days. Something has happened to the earth and the moon and the sun. The earth's orbit was elongated from 360 days to 365 and a quarter. And the orbit of the moon going around the earth was shrunk from 30 days to 29 days, 12 hours, 793 parts. Now, what are parts? God uses parts. And he has given 1,080 parts for an hour. Why? Because that number is equally divisible by 2, by 4, by 6, by 5. I don't know if it's 7. However, of 10 numbers, 8 of it equally divisible into it with no parts left over. Okay? Now, 793 parts brings that remainder of the day about three quarters along toward the next day. So when the calendar is calculated, the parts that are left over are held until the next year. Then you add those together, and if it equals an hour, okay, then you put an hour in. Then those are accumulated until you have 24 hours. Then you add a day in. See? And all of that must be put into the 7-day week. This is why it has to be calculated. See? Because God made it, God created it, God changed the orbits and everything. Only he can give the knowledge on what to do with it. Okay? So through all of this, the appointed time was determined before the foundation of the world. So God had to give the calculations on how to figure the calendar and also that it would fit into God's appointed times. In the year that Jesus was crucified and in the year that Jesus was born, there were postponements. And there had to be postponements for those to be accurate. Both years were identical. You had the Feast of Trumpets on the seventh day. You had the Day of Atonement on the second day. Feast of Trumpets on Sabbath, Day of Atonement on Monday. Passover on the fourth day. So that is what you call the alignment of 2, 4, 7. Both instances. Now, we've got that all in the book. Now, to tell you how accurate that the calculations were for the crucifixion of Christ in 30 AD in the middle of the week, In year 9 of the 19-year time cycle, because the cycle of the moon, the cycle of the sun are justified to each other every 19 years. And they come in close proximity of 1 hour and so many parts difference after 19 years. You know, like those three tracks. Moon is going around, the sun is, Earth is going around the sun. And so the solar year and the lunar year in 19 years synchronizes to 1 hour and something. So then everything is based upon that. Okay? And you make adjustments to keep everything accurate. Now, come back to the Gregorian calendar we have today. Why did they have to change it in 1540? Because the Julian calendar was losing that quarter of a day from the time of Julius Caesar. So by the time it got to 1540, spring was in the winter. Okay, here's another one for the postponement people. Okay? For the no postponement people. Okay. How did they solve the problem? Well, they solved it this way. They took the month of October, and they came to the 4th of October, and they declared that the next day was the 15th of October, to make up for all the time that had been lost through all the years, because they couldn't properly keep track of it. Well, the calculated Hebrew calendar helps us keep it all on time, all the time. Okay? Now, in the 19-year time cycle of 30 AD, the ninth year of that 19-year time cycle is when a special adjustment needs to be made if there is an accumulation of 793 parts, and that would move because of the other accumulation. If that adjustment were made, it would move everything one day forward to keep it in synchronization, just like they moved 15 days or 11 days forward in 1540. Because you had to synchronize it. You can't say spring is beginning and it's clear back here at the 27th of February. So they had to make that adjustment, see? Okay? In the year that Jesus was crucified, not year, but in the 19-year time cycle when Jesus was crucified in 30 AD, the adjustment for the ninth year, which would have put everything ahead one day, but didn't, because it came out to 23 hours, 789 parts. Four parts short of having to make the adjustment. Now, that's how accurate the appointed time of Jesus' crucifixion was. Okay? That's why, in the appendix back here, and in a couple of our other books, we have when was Jesus born, and we have eight historically provable chronologies to know he had to be born in 5 B.C., we have the chronology showing from also those same chronologies right up to when he was crucified, and it had to be 30 A.D. And the Passover was in the middle of the week. Okay? All of this determined by God. Now, with the calculations that we have today, you can figure back accurately to the time of Hezekiah, about in the 800s B.C., when the sundial went back 10 degrees. Everything from there forward is accurate. Now, in the time of Christ, Gamaliel, who was Hillel the First. Remember, he's recorded in the book of Acts of giving counsel to the Sanhedrin. The Sanhedrin had the calendar court. Hillel is the great-great-great-grandson of Hillel the First, and he is called Hillel the Second. Now, in the 350s AD, there was so much persecution against the Jews and the Christians, who used the calculated Hebrew calendar as well, that he thought that, sure enough, the persecutions would be so intense that they would lose all knowledge of the holy days. And since only the priesthood could calculate it, and the priesthood could announce it, what if the priesthood were killed? How would anybody know when to do what? Because God entrusted it to the priesthood. And Hillel the Second was descended of the priesthood. So he didn't invent the calendar. He didn't put the postponements into the calendar. He published the calendar to make it public. And those are the same calculations that we have today. Now, maybe there have been a couple adjustments made to it mathematically to keep it in balance from that time to this, by the descendants of the Aaronic priesthood and Levitical priest to keep it in season, okay? Now, I know this is heavy. Your brain is probably going, bing, okay? But have you ever seen pictures of the universe with the stars and the galaxies and everything out there? Does that blow your mind? God knows them all by name and by number. So what I'm telling you is going to cause you to have brain strain because it is very detailed, and God must reveal on how to do it because things are so out of sequence that unless God gave the calculations and the postponements, which then are merely adjustments to keep everything synchronized, if he had not given that knowledge, we would not be able to keep time according to the things commanded in the Bible. Now let's go one step further. I'll save this for the book. Let's come to Daniel, the 9th chapter, okay? Daniel 9, it's not where it is in the King James. You have to go back toward the New Testament. You come to Proverbs, Job, Lamentations, Ecclesiastes, and then you get on page 850, Daniel. Now let's come to Daniel 9. I'll let you read all the details in the book. Okay? Now let's pick it up here, beginning in verse 22. Isn't this interesting? Verse 21 says, yea, and while I was speaking in prayer, even the man Gabriel. Now that's the angel Gabriel. What is he bringing to Daniel? Leading up to the Messiah, correct? Who is the one that spoke to John the Baptist's father in the temple? Gabriel. About the one who was going to go before the Lord. His coming son. Who spoke to Mary? Gabriel. Can we deduce that Gabriel was in charge of making sure that all the prophecies of the Messiah would be kept on time? That would be reasonable, wouldn't it? Okay. Even a man, Gabriel, who I'd seen in the vision at the beginning, being caused to fly swiftly, came to me about the time of the evening sacrifice. And he made me to understand and talk to me and said, O Daniel, I have now come forth to give you insight and understanding. at the beginning of your supplications, the word went forth, and I've come to declare it, for you are greatly beloved. Therefore, consider the word and understand the vision. Okay. Here we go. 70 weeks. Now, these are weeks of 7 years. This is tied to the 7-year land Sabbath and to the Jubilee. When is the land Sabbath declared? 7th year on the Day of Atonement. When is the Jubilee declared? After the 49th year, and it is the first year of the next cycle, but the 50th year. Okay? This means that the Messiah, in going down through this, the Messiah was crucified in the spring, so therefore atonement was not the day Jesus died, but it was the day that the 7-year cycle was declared and the Jubilee was declared. So there are 70 of these. Now let's read it. Are decreed upon your people, upon your holy city, to finish the transgression. Now notice, this is all-inclusive and goes beyond the literal 70 weeks as well. Let's read it. To finish the transgression, to make an end of sin, to make reconciliation for iniquity, to bring in everlasting righteousness, and to seal up the vision and the prophecy, and to anoint the most holy. Now that is an all-encompassing verse. Okay? Verse 25. Know therefore and understand that from the going forth of the commandment to restore and build Jerusalem to Messiah the Prince. Now, Carl Franklin has done the research on the kings of Persia, so we know exactly what year that decree was made, because there were several decrees. You have to have the right one. Okay? Now notice. Notice how this is broken up. To restore and build Jerusalem to Messiah the Prince shall be 7 weeks. 7 weeks of 7 years is how many? 49 years. Okay? Break. These are not continuous. There is a break in the Hebrew. There is a break in the timing. And there are intervening years between the 7 and the 62. Shall be 7 weeks and 62 weeks. It shall be built again with streets and the wall, even in troublous times. And that was exactly 49 years. We've got the chronology in the book. How that worked out with the kings of Persia, the kings of Babylon, kings of Media, to know which one was which and when the decree was given. Carl has got all of that taken care of. Okay? Now notice verse 26. And after 62 weeks, Messiah shall be cut off. The mistake that most everyone does in trying to figure the 70 weeks, in which I did in the first edition of the Harmony of the Gospels, I included it as a contiguous 70 weeks to the crucifixion of Christ. But since these heptads of 7 years, as they are called, begin and end on a Day of Atonement, it could not include his crucifixion in the spring. So we failed to read a very simple word. And after 62 weeks, it's not included in the 62 weeks. It doesn't say at the end of 62 weeks. It says after. Now, here's the catch. It doesn't tell us how long after, does it? That's filled in by something else. Okay? Messiah shall be cut off, but not for himself. And the people of the prince, or the prince of the people who shall come, shall destroy the city and the sanctuary, and his end shall be with a flood. Unto the end of the war, desolations are determined. And he shall confirm the covenant with many for 1 week. That is not Christ. This is the prince of the people who will confirm the covenant talked about in Daniel the 11th chapter for 1 week. 1 week is what? 7 years. So this is the 70th week. So when the 62 weeks end, Messiah is to appear. Then the 70th week, because you have 49 and 62, which then is, you have 7 and 62 then, which is 69 times 7, okay? The 70th week is here, verse 27, and that is yet to happen. Now, I know you're going to go home with a headache, okay? Now, in the midst of the week, he shall cause the sacrifice and offering to cease. Now, let me ask you a question. When Jesus died, did he cause the sacrifice and offering to cease? Or did they continue? They continued for 40 years, right? Okay. So this is talking about the sacrifices at the end with the coming temple that we talked about earlier this morning. See? Okay. Now, when you get the right timing of the 72 weeks or of the 7 weeks or 49 years and the 62 weeks of 343 years, okay? You know when the Messiah will come. How can we get an approximation of when he will come? What is the one firm date that is absolutely confirmed historically and known? That is the day of the crucifixion of Christ. Okay? How long was his ministry? 3.5 years. So you go backward 3.5 years. He died in the spring. When did he begin? In the fall. Okay? Now, we show in the book. Let's come here to Matthew, the 3rd chapter. Let's see it here. Matthew, the 3rd chapter. All right? Let's ask the question. When was Jesus anointed as the Messiah? Now, he didn't go to the temple. The priest did not do it. God did it. Right? Matthew 3. Let's come here to verse 13. Then Jesus came from Galilee to Jordan to John to be baptized by him. But John tried to prevent him, saying, I have need to be baptized by you, and you come to me? Then Jesus answered and said to him, you must permit it at this time, for it is in this manner it is fitting for us to fulfill all righteousness. Then he permitted him to be baptized. Now notice what happened. Okay? And after he was baptized, Jesus came up immediately out of the water, and behold, the heavens were opened to him, and the Spirit of God descending as a dove and coming upon him. That's what John the Baptist saw. Okay? And God told John the Baptist, on whom you see the Holy Spirit come, he is the one. Then notice what happened. Verse 17. And a voice from heaven said, this is my Son, the Beloved, in whom I have great delight. When he received the Holy Spirit at that time, though he was full of the Holy Spirit before, that's when he was anointed to preach the gospel. And we'll finish by going to Luke 4 here in just a little bit and see that occurrence. What did he do immediately? All right? Chapter 4, verse 1. Then Jesus was led up into the wilderness by the Spirit in order to be tempted by Satan the devil. He first had to conquer Satan the devil. Now remember, this is in the fall. This is in the fall of 26 A.D. And we show the chronology there to show that 26 A.D. was a jubilee year. And Jesus' ministry was a jubilee ministry to release those who are bound by Satan the devil. But first he had to conquer him. And so Jesus' ministry began on the Day of Atonement, which ended the 434 years or the 62 weeks, and began the Jubilee year, the appointed time. Okay? So he had to conquer and overcome Satan the devil first. Now, you'll have to read the rest of it there in the book when you get it, but come here to Luke, the fourth chapter, and let's see where Jesus announced that he had been anointed. And this is also interesting. Now, while you're turning there, how do you count to the Jubilee? You have seven periods of 7 years totaling 49. The next year is the 50th year. Now, let's read right here in Luke 4 and verse 16. And he came to Nazareth, where he had been brought up, and according to his custom, he went into the synagogue on the Sabbath day. Now, the Greek here means the day of the weeks or the day of Pentecost. How do you count Pentecost? 7 weeks of 7 days or 49 days? And the 50th day is Pentecost. And this adds proof to the fact that Pentecost pictures the resurrection, because the first resurrection will be a jubilee for all who are resurrected, because they will be free from the flesh, free from Satan the devil. They will now be spirit beings. Now also, as you read in the letter you just got, whenever the Passover occurs in the middle of the week, Pentecost is on the 8th of Sivan. And number 8 is a new beginning. Would you agree that being resurrected from the dead is a new beginning? Yes, indeed. Okay. So he stood up to read, and there was given to him the book of the prophet Isaiah. And when he unrolled the scroll, he found the place where it was written, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me." When did it come upon him? When he was baptized. See? That's when he was anointed. "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me. For this reason, he has anointed me," Christ, "to preach the gospel to the poor. He has sent me to heal those who are brokenhearted, to proclaim pardon to the captives and recovery of the sight to the blind, to send forth in deliverance those who have been crushed, to proclaim the acceptable year of the Lord." The 50th year, a jubilee. And when was the Day of Atonement? In 26 A.D., in the middle of the week. September 11th, Wednesday, Julian calendar, 26 A.D. Now, think of this. Think of this, brethren. Two things. Jesus began his ministry against Satan the devil in the middle of the week. He was crucified in the middle of the week. Think on this a little more. Jesus was because of the patterns, we can say just a little bit less than absolute proof. He was born on a Sabbath day, the Feast of Trumpets. What day of the week was he resurrected from the dead? On the Sabbath day. So Jesus was born on the Sabbath and born again from the dead on the Sabbath. See how all of those patterns come together? See, now maybe that'll give you a little happiness and joy. That's easier to understand than from what we have been covering here with all the details. But you see how God works. See? God uses the calculated Hebrew calendar. No man has any jurisdiction over it. Men did not invent it. God gave it to them. God uses it. Okay, now, if you will look at the Holy Day calendar we have sent you, if you have that big green one, you will see that we are in a period of 10 years when the Passover does not fall in the middle of the week. Then the next 10 years, the Passover comes in the middle of the week 5 times. Now, how all that fits in with the events at the end, we don't know. Someone calculated that the next Jubilee is 2026. Don't set your heart on it. Okay? We don't know the day or the hour, but with the holy days, we can understand the season and we can understand the time. Okay? But I don't know about you, but to me, that's really exciting stuff. You see, and when you get down to things that God is so accurate, God is so good, God keeps track of every second of time. God has set the appointed times. And God has set the appointed time for the return of Jesus Christ. So at the appointed time, it'll happen. So the meantime, what we need to do is make sure that we qualify to be there when the appointed time takes place. And what we have to do is be active and be zealous and be excited about the Word of God. We are the only generation, brethren, that has the whole Bible with understanding. See, we didn't have the whole Bible available to people until 500 years ago. And God promised that in the end, the wise will understand. But you see, we've got to yield to God. We've got to do things God's way. We have to look to God. We have to look to Christ in faith. We have to trust in what God is doing. We have to believe what He tells us. We have to believe His word. We have to keep His commandments and love Him with all our heart, all our mind, all our soul, all our being. Because to whom much has been given, much is required, right? Yes. See? So I'm happy to have been here. And look forward to it. By the way, this is the 16th year. Okay? That's right. Okay, so we'll go ahead and close services here. And if Rod Rep, if you could close in prayer for us, we'd appreciate it very much. Okay? Everybody stand, please.